host.
Hey guys, it's Sunny. If you're listening to this, you're listening on the free iTunes feed. We're talking about The Last Duel this week, which may not even be in theaters anymore. Who can say? But good movie. You should check it out. We all liked it. And we're going to have we'll have our members only Patreon exclusive forever episode on Squid Game on Monday. We got a special guest, a listener. Paul Crookston, big fan of the show, former producer, going to be stopping by to talk about Korea and the culture there and how that impacted the show. That show is wrapping up. We're going to have to come up with a new one to start talking about soon. So, you know, you can hop in the comments there if you're a member of the Patreon and figure out what we want to talk about next. But go to subbeacon.com, sign up. It's as little as a dollar a month. It's not very expensive. And you'll get bonus stuff. You'll support the show. You'll keep Vic rolling in gout medicine. This Friday, we'll have a new episode up. It's going to be about the French Dispatch, which Vic was a big fan of for certain reasons. You can figure out why maybe on your own. That's going to be this Friday, Squid Game on Monday, or just you'd listen to this right now, which is about The Last Duel. Again, a couple weeks old. Get new stuff. Subbeacon.com. Sign up there. See you there.
Unspeakable charge has been brought against you.
Jacques Legris entered our home. He attacked me.
The accusation is false.
I am telling the truth.
The truth does not matter. There is only the power of men.
This should be settled quietly.
I am innocent!
I request a duel to the death.
If you lose, your wife will suffer dire consequences.
One of us has lied. Let us let God decide.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. The holidays are just around the corner, and with supply chain issues, you need to order your mugs, onesies, and headache shirts right after listening to this show. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what's going on?
I changed a tire this evening.
Hey, what? Very good. Tell us
on the side of the road or
let's exchange flat tire stories. Go ahead.
You know what? All I was going to say is that changing a tire is not like riding a bicycle.
Oh,
if you don't do it for a while,
you forget. Okay. Question.
Yes.
Did you know where? It's funny. I assume it's still standard on all cars, new cars. If you purchase a car, forget about a used car or whatever. But if you're purchasing a car or leasing a car, I assume it's still standard that somewhere in the car, there's a compartment that contains all the tire changing tools.
Still, yes.
Including a jack, maybe a mini jack.
A mini jack.
Just enough.
And a donut. Not a full-size spare, but a donut.
Oh, okay.
This one was quite easy to find in the Honda Odyssey. Very, very thoughtfully designed. Very, honestly, the tire was basically where you would think it would be, almost. On the Kia Sedona.
Okay.
The Kia Sedona was that the tire was underneath the car.
Yes.
Oh.
Kate's
Highlander. And that you had to go and find some tiny little screw that you undid from inside that then dropped the tire down.
That's exactly right. Kate's Highlander
terrible
is exactly
design.
The same way. It's not in, it's underneath.
Worst design ever. But the Honda Odyssey, did you want to guess, Victorino?
I was going to guess it was underneath the way the Kia Sedona was because that's what I thought it was going to be.
Nope. Is it in the trunk?
No, it's just under on the floor underneath essentially the center console. So you go in through the middle row.
Yeah, oh, directly.
Just peel up the carpet, open up the little wood flooring, and then pull it right out. It was great. And Honda, I would say this about Honda. The thoughtfulness of the way the tools were laid out in its own little tray that itself fits inside the donut spare.
Well, that's nice.
Very, very thoughtful design.
Oh, that is nice, right in the middle. Yes. Where were you when it happened? Like, was it like a quiet road, a highway, somewhere in between?
Was there a safe shoulder? Shannon was just going to pick Flash up from baseball practice tonight, and as she was driving over to the middle school, she hit something and it went pop, and so she pulled into a little gas station, parked off to the side, called me. I came over with the other car, and the point is, what I was going to brag on myself for is that from soup to nuts, from the time I arrived on scene to the time I drove away, it's only 1 hour.
Hey.
Not bad.
Considering I had to figure out where everything is,
yes,
then
very
move
good.
All of the various assorted crayons and masks and books and whatnot off of the floor, right? All the, you know, all that stuff that accumulates on the floor in the middle row. I had to move all that out of the way. Then I had to remember, like, okay, where's the jack go? Mm-hmm. How many turns? There's a wheel lock. Oh, I got to find where the wheel lock is. Mm-hmm. Oh, the wheel lock is in the special secret compartment in the dashboard. Anyway, all of that.
An hour.
1 hour. I think that's pretty good.
That's very good. It's particularly since you think you were saying that, you know, you forget, but not really. It came back to you.
Including came back to me.
Yeah. Don't lose those.
Did you remember to loosen the nuts while it was on the ground before you jacked it up?
Oh, hell yeah. Okay. Hell
very
yeah.
Very good.
You got to get that's always mistake number one. You start trying to unscrew it after you've lifted it up. You're like, it's just turning.
And it's spinning around. It's spinning. Yeah. Okay. Sonny, have you ever been in that position?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Once, twice I have had to change a tire not in my own garage or parking space. Mm-hmm. Once I was on like 66, I was doing like 80 and hit a pothole and very, very loud noise. And like, sure enough, like 5 minutes later, the little indicator that was like your low tire. So I like pulled off. Got it changed. I pulled into a like Walmart or something, or a Sears or something, mm-hmm. A place that sells tires. And I like went to the guys. I was like, I think my tire's busted, because there was a big old knot on the side of it. It was like a grapefruit sized ball on the side of it. And I was like, they're like, yep, gonna need a new one. Not gonna be able to fix that.
Can't patch that.
I was like, all right. Well, do you guys have one? And they were like, nope, not for this car. I was like, fuck. So I changed that one myself, in the parking lot of the Walmart or Sears or whatever it was, and then like a year later, the same. Oh, the bonus on that one was I didn't just pop the tire, I also dented the rim of the wheel. Have you ever dented the rim of a wheel?
That's expensive.
You know what that means. You gotta buy a new rim. Yeah. That was on the Volvo C30. That was a $1,000 fix on top of the tire, which was, you know, however much more.
At which point, you might as well just remove both tires.
Did you get spinning rims then? I mean, if you're gonna.
Yeah, well, I got the ones like from last week's episode with they pop out the side and they tear up the Gladiator.
Very good.
That's what I got.
So I had my favorite changing a spare tire story is probably not true. All right, so let's just accept that it's probably apocryphal. But in high school, my friend Seth told the story about how the first time he changed a tire and he put the new one on, that he did not tighten the lug nuts at all. In fact, maybe even forgot to put the lug nuts back on.
Oh, boy.
And he started driving, and he was driving down a hill, and the tire came off. So the tire comes off.
Put the lug nuts on.
The whole car... down onto the front corner, but the tire then rolls down the hill, up the other side of the hill, then comes back, and then crashes into the front, and then dents his bumper.
That sounds like something that you would see on a Simpsons episode.
The crazy thing is the girl on the passenger side had a hot dog. Same girl. All in one. Oh, what are the odds?
We got an email from somebody who's like,
yes.
Well, I was listening to you guys, and I thought to myself, wait a minute. That hot dog girl went to my high. Oh.
She transferred. She transferred from that listener's to ours and mine and yours. Anyway, when Kate was pregnant with our son, we were going up to Connecticut, and it was a brand new Highlander at the time. It was about 2 years, a year old or something, and clearly hit something very long and sharp in on the turnpike heading towards New York. And it was like right before, it might have been Vince Lombardi, between Vince Lombardi and Joyce Kilmer, so up there. And you hear it, and the worst is when you hear
it. So you parked far away on the parking lot over by the reeds and the
yeah,
rushes.
Yeah, where I usually park.
You flipped your lights on off a couple times just to make sure they were still working.
I said, hey, do you got a jack? That's what I said. So the thing is, the worst, thank you, the worst thing is when you're driving and you're hearing the noise and you put yourself in denial. You're like, no, that's not it.
Oh, I'm sure it's just a paper. It's a plastic bag.
And and everything starts shaking like this. And then I said, wow. So we pull over. Luckily, they were doing some sort of construction on that rest stop exit ramp. So it was a different one. So it was quiet, but it was right on the side of the turnpike. And I pulled over and I said, well.
It's just like that scene in Bohemian Rhapsody.
So anyway, and what happened. So then Kate said, well, I mean, I guess we can call AAA. And I looked, I said, we're heading up to see her parents. I said, I can't live with the shame. And I said, all right, I'm going out and see what I can do. And that's when I discovered that the tire was underneath and you had to sort of, turn the thing to get it lowered.
What a terrible design. How do these engineers live with themselves?
And with me in cleanliness, my hands were just covered in black. I'm just trying not to think about it. And I actually did it. So I changed and all the other equipment's there. So I was able to jack it. And then
You were able to jack it at the side.
Were you on the rest at the rest stop, or were you on the side of the turnpike?
I was on a lane. I was on a lane that had been closed, and I was sitting.
That's amazing.
As the kids say, Indian
style.
I know, because you hear this all the time, where you get and so my back is to the turnpike. Right, it was a lane that wasn't used, but one lane over was used. So then I'm sitting there. And I put it together. And the funniest thing is we got to, it's a real tire. It's not a donut. But we got to when we finally got to Connecticut, my father-in-law said that my in-laws had a discussion about, I wonder if he's going to change it himself or if he's going to call AAA. And my father bet that I would change it. My mother-in-law said, no, he's not going to change it. Anyway.
Honestly, I think it's incredibly butch of you to have done that.
For me, yes.
Anybody. If I was on the side of 995 or on the turnpike, in one of those spare lanes, and
it's
got
not
a flat,
comfortable, I sat.
I will call AAA and sit and like play snood on my phone or something.
I sat flat on the road, which was also very weird. But
you could die doing.
You
doing
could,
that.
And people have. The craziest thing is prior to that. Remember, I used to drive that red Montero. I had that Jeep JVL.
Yeah,
that one. I would wear those tires out until they were so thin, and I actually blew out a tire on that one. On just after I passed the Millard Tidings Bridge in Maryland.
Oh,
it immediately the car without even it just immediately went into the right lane. Thank God there was nobody in that lane. I had to call AAA for that one because I couldn't get the jack high enough. And it's weird; you could see all the stuff blown out with the steel, the stuff inside. It's crazy.
Vic, when you changed your tire on the side of the road, did you make sure that you had the bad tire was facing the lane.
The bad tire
was like next to the lane. Oh yeah, see that I don't know if I would do that, frankly.
Did you put out flashers? Did you throw a flare out there? It was in the morning. It was in the morning. So it was maybe.
Did you make the kids stand in the lane going like this, waving their hands?
Yeah, no flares or anything, and. It's one of those things that afterwards you think, oh, that was kind of dangerous.
But I will just say this, in case there are any engineers listening who work for automotive companies, it would be nice, and it would cost like half a penny, if they included in the car change kit just a pair of latex gloves.
Yes.
So that should you have to do this work, you can have clean hands when you're done. What would that cost?
Right?
You throw two, like one pair small, one pair large. You put them in a little, like with a, in a little wipe thing, right in the little where the jack is.
You're not doing it in a tux. You're not in a black tie changing it. Part of the fun. It's part of the fun is getting dirty and being like, look at me. I'm almost a man.
I was completely dirty. I had to go to the next rest stop and wash my hands because they were all covered in lube. Anyway, Sonny, what's going on with you?
So as I mentioned on the show last week, I was going camping this weekend. Mm. Last weekend.
Oh yes.
Went camping.
Camping update.
And I survived, obviously. I've returned triumphant.
You were cold, weren't you?
No, I was never cold.
Minus 40 bad.
It was in a heated cabin. Like, uh-oh. The nights were in a heated cabin. I was cold, like, during the, like, when it was, like, outside, we were standing around the fire, you know, because it got down to, like, 40. I was in shorts first day. Second day, we went out early for a hike, for a little hike slash mountain climb. Mm. I was not expecting this, but there was, like, an actual, like, nearly sheer, you know, solid, like, a real climb with handholds.
Yeah,
and stuff. And we did some climbing there. And so, like, when I was packing for this trip, I don't really own a lot of camping stuff, right? I was like, what am I gonna need for this trip? All right, well, I need some boots. I've got some boots. I'll bring my darn tough socks for my boots.
You're like
as you know, I have the darn tough socks. You, perfect.
Yeah,
perfect. But I was like, what pants am I gonna wear? What do I have that would work for camping? I don't know. I mean, I've got some like sweatpants.
Got some
corduroys.
Yeah, yeah, you and got pocket squares.
And then I was like, oh, I know what I can wear.
Prana.
I can wear my Prada jeans. The Prada jeans that JVL purchased for me many years ago. I put them on. They still fit. They were perfect.
Well,
for
the gusseted
that
crotch.
The gusseted crotch.
You
but
didn't
on
go
top
hiking
of that,
in denim, did you?
Yes, absolutely. Oh. The best part was we got to this like rock wall,
too,
this like sheer rock wall. Like again, it's like not. It's I mean, it's not like I was able to do it, so it obviously wasn't difficult. But like it was. You know, I had my hands on the
right
on
now.
The
Matt Robarts is dying.
And we get there, and the guide's like, "All right, you want to put your water bottles in your backpacks." And I was like, "Backpack? That's funny."
Quick,
so I was like, "What am I going to do? What am I going
to
do with my
child.
Water
Hold
bottle
this.
And my daughter's water bottle?" At first, I was like, "Here, all right, you hold this, Katie. You hold this." And she was like, "Well, that doesn't make any
Watch
sense."
Watch me.
So I was like, "Oh, yeah. You're right. Okay." So I was able to get both of the water bottles in the deep pockets of the Prada jeans.
Amazing.
Amazing. The Italian designer. Yes. Influence of the deep pockets
you
of these Prada jeans.
You could fit
I got them right in there.
True.
I got and I was able to. I was able to
I'm
get up both
fan.
Hands. I had all my. So
very
I want to thank. I want to thank JVL for his very thoughtful gift a year or two back, and for introducing me to the brand of Prada, which I never. I mean, I like we know we've got this House of Gucci movie coming up.
Yes.
From Ridley Scott. I wish it was a House of Prada movie because I would have a lot of. I would sympathize with them more because I would, you know, be part of the fashion.
That
world.
Gusseted crotch really hooked you up while you were climbing the rock wall, didn't it?
Yeah,
couldn't imagine you in jeans lots of, with a normal crotch.
Oh yeah, no. If I was wearing like my Levi's, no way.
No, I would have worn the Prada's too because that's all I. If it's not that, I'm going in khakis. Those are the choices. So I'll stick
no,
with the Prada's.
You'd wear your cargo shorts. Victorino.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. I have my cargo shorts. That's very true.
And maybe you'd have your Georgetown University sweatshirt tied around your shoulders.
Oh, that kind of a sweatshirt. That kind of a, no, I don't have a hoodie. I don't have that kind of a sweatshirt. Sweater.
The other thing I wore was a very nice shirt that my wife had bought me, a Vermont flannel shirt, which was...
Were you at an Indigo Girls concert or camping?
I could have easily in my Prada jeans and my Vermont flannel shirt. It was amazing.
I could pick
okay,
you up
so
in my
Sonny,
Subaru.
I need you to give me a greater than less than. All
sure.
right. Beach, woods.
Woods greater than beach.
Oh,
really?
Woods.
Oh,
woods greater
no,
than
there's
beach,
dirt.
Yeah.
So much more
stuff.
Capacity for dirt.
Yes, and
in
all
the
sorts
woods.
Of peril.
The beach is nothing but dirt. The beach is just a big ribbon of dirt.
Sand is not dirt. Help me. It's not mud.
The beach is just a ribbon insane. Of dirt, and you just it gets wonderful. Everywhere.
It's wonderful. I'm not going
it's
to the
course.
Woods. It's bad.
It.
It's bad. My allergies.
No, the woods is better. I mean, I find like
bears.
I like the sights of the forest, the woods and stuff more than I like the ocean and waves and
oh, I
the,
love that.
Sand.
I can stare
again,
that
just the strip of dirt. Like, oh, here's a strip of dirt. We're all gonna sit on it for hours in the sun. Oh, that sounds awesome.
Right.
Pass.
related to beaches, Sonny. You were very outspoken. I noticed about this Royal Caribbean 274-day cruise saying that. You
did you see that? It's ridiculous.
I did. And
what
it's,
is, I missed this entirely. What
explain,
is it?
Sonny, this.
Well, the Royal Caribbean is putting together a 9-month cruise. It's 9 months on a
there
cruise.
There are a lot of people who do these 100-plus-day cruises. They're mostly elderly.
270-some days, mm-hmm. 274 days, 272
yes, 274.
Days, something like that. But it's basically nine straight months on a cruise ship. I would rather die. I would rather die. From dysentery.
I don't know.
Go on that
I'm
cruise.
Just saying I'm curious.
I probably would die from dysentery on that cruise. Yes. You would die of gout. Your gout would explode your toe.
After like
your
2 weeks
would,
straight
if you were,
of
if you
crab
were on,
claws.
If you were on a cruise for like for 9 straight
also,
months,
yes.
By month 2, you would have had to like have one of your
the question
feet
is,
amputated.
The question is what would outweigh which meaning, you know, I could use the gym every day and I can eat buffet every day. You know, what would win out? I guess maybe the food. I would have to work out much more than considering what I'd be eating.
I got to think that in a normal ship's complement on this, a 9-month cruise probably means, let me do the math, 40 dead people.
Oh, because right. It's 40? Like one out of every 4 trips in and out. Right. You know, remember our
no,
friend
no, it's,
in the cruise
it's a
business
couple,
told us about
a
this.
A couple of them die on every
right.
trip.
And maybe
so
they intend,
every
like,
week,
this is where I'm going to spend my final days.
Every, you go on a 1-week cruise with a bunch of old people, and at least 2 of them don't come home every trip.
Yeah. Well, yes. But you know what? That's why they have that holding area. For the event, it's right next to where they keep the shrimp. In,
no, it's
in the
this
lower
is
level.
What that's what they do. They put them in the freezer.
The freezer with the ice. They put them in ice.
I'll do something.
The thing
burial
is,
at
I
sea.
Mean, do you remember hearing? I remember talking to our friend who was in the cruise business, saying, you know, there were people, couples, for example, who chose to basically live at sea for tax reasons and other things like that. And there was like, you could like weigh the, you know, costs and benefits in terms of how you pay your taxes or where you your residence. And if you have enough money, I mean, I don't know how much it would cost. How much is a 274-day cruise? But, you know, you got people taking care of you basically like it's a nursing home, you know, and if you don't mind the occasional heavy seas, you know, then you're fine. And you have 3 meals a day at least, not counting the midnight buffet. Entertainment, if you don't get tired of the same sort of show all the time.
On the
I
other
don't know.
Hand, if it's one of the Royal Caribbean booze cruisey ones that we see with all the 20-year-olds.
Yes.
That
oh, yeah.
that thing after 9 months.
I would do...
A lot of babies being born.
I was going to say no.
When they come back to port.
Cycle of life.
So, yes, I would like to do that one just to see what my odds are. You know, also see if I could break, see if I could eventually violate the fraternization ban, right? Eventually they finally break. I got to, you know, let's get together with the cruisers.
Oh, no. I don't think there's ever any break in the fraternization.
Ever. That would never happen.
Unless you have a lot of money.
Yes. No, I knew a guy who worked, he used to work at one of the cruise lines in a previous life. And he had so many fascinating stories about, you know, their world versus our world. Because, you know, I mean, they had their own hangout areas internally, right, mm-hmm. within inside the ship. But one of the interesting things he said, for example, you could not go alone. You were allowed, if you were not the bottom rung, if you were not the cabin boys and the, you know, I mean, the workers per se. But let's say you were in charge of like, you know, entertainment and thing, you know, involved into the entertainment side. Then he said that you'd be able to go to the bar, but not alone. You would have to be accompanied by a fellow employee. You couldn't sit there and then suddenly chat up guests. That would be, I guess, considered dangerous. And the other thing is, you were never supposed to, if anyone asked you for help, you could never say, you're welcome. You would get in trouble if a boss heard you say, you're always supposed to say, my pleasure.
My pleasure, of course.
So, of course.
Now, this is, I could see the Job Bluth version of a cruise ship where when they're off hours, you're encouraged to go to the bar by yourself.
Right. Well, that's a good Job Bluth voice. So, House of Gucci, is that something we're doing in regular theaters?
Dune is premiering right now.
No, Dune is great because you could just sit
right
there.
Right now.
I will see it over the next, 4 days because I believe it's basically a week-long show. But is House of Gucci going to be in, is it select or it's going to be all theaters? Because I saw the trailer.
I don't know. I get the sense that this is not very good from what I have heard and what I have seen.
Yeah.
So.
Despite the director,
Ridley Scott has a not insignificant number of flops on his artistic misfires, shall we say.
Speaking of Ridley Scott, this weekend at the box office, he did not appear in the top three. We'll get to that in a second. At the top of the box office is actually Halloween Kills. You know, weeks ahead of Halloween, actually. It's not until next weekend. Slashed its way to the top of the box office. $49.4 million, followed by No Time to Die with $23.8 million. And in third place.
Ooh, is that good?
We're going to get to that in a second. Venom 2. I'm just going to call it Venom 2 with $16.5 million. Box office thoughts, gentlemen.
Halloween Kills did $50 million at the box office, despite also being on Peacock, a service that has 54 million subscribers. Somehow,
is it because they get it for
that
free?
That just means
some other
anybody
package?
Who's a Comcast. I believe that means anybody who's a Comcast million? Subscriber is a Peacock subscriber.
I don't know. I don't know. I would assume that is there's some sort of fudging there, but the numbers that they report, 54 million accounts. Halloween Kills did $50 million, which is a big number. A lot of people, some people were pretty surprised because, again, it's on Peacock, which has 54 million subscribers. I am not that surprised because when people were like, oh, but it's on Peacock, that's going to depress the, I was like, nobody uses Peacock. Nobody on earth has ever watched anything on Peacock. And then I got a bunch of angry people on Twitter saying, oh, well, I watch it for sports. I watch it for The Office.
Wrestling.
I watch it for wrestling. No, a lot of wrestling fans out there. So I was like, okay, I guess some people have Peacock, but nobody would watch
Peacock.
Halloween
I watch the it. Cock all the time, man.
Well, I'm sure you're a big fan of the cock, but my point is, 50 million was a big number. People were surprised by it. We'll see how it holds. It depends on how you count A Quiet Place. If A Quiet Place counts as horror, Place Part 2 counts as horror or action or whatever. But it is, that's a big number. No Time to Die dropped about 52 or 54%, something like that, which is like on par with Skyfall or Spectre. But, you know, people were like, oh, this movie's going to hold so well. I mean, it debuted way worse than either of those movies, and it is holding about the same. It's a soft Bond movie at the box office, at least domestically. Foreign, it's still doing pretty well. You know, it's over 400 million. What was third? Oh, third was Venom. Let There Be Carnage, which is at 160. It's gonna get up towards around 200 million. Good for it. And The Last Duel.
Fourth place was Adam's Family 2. And then in fifth place
Fourth place was Adam's Family 2. Fifth place was The Last Duel. So
4.8 million.
I'll just segue into my big boy review here. So here's the thing about The Last Duel. I don't know. You guys don't go to the movies quite as much as I do. You still go more than the average person, I think. But you do not go as often as I do. And I saw the trailer for this movie probably 20 times over the last 6 months.
For The Last Duel.
For The Last Duel. It played in front of every movie.
Yes.
Played in front of every movie. And it was an interestingly cut trailer in that it had the sliding swords and the sliding cross. And it looked like this kind of courtroom drama, but set in medieval times. And it looked hopelessly dour. It looked like the like angstiest movie that could possibly be released. Again, it looked like a courtroom Me Too drama set in mud times, because that's all that mud. That's all you could see in this trailer was mud and clouds, just grayscale.
Yeah.
So it was sold to people as this like horribly dour message movie about Me Too. And I don't know how you guys experience the film, but it is not that. It's actually, it's funny. It's like weirdly funny. It's weirdly entertaining. It is. I mean, the way they should have sold this movie to people is this is Gladiator by the Good Will Hunting guys.
That's the elevator pitch.
That would be it's Gladiator, and it's written by the guys who wrote Good Will Hunting, and it should have had more Ben Affleck, who is great in this movie, as the ridiculous Count d'Alençon or whatever. The basic plot review of this movie, it is told in a Rashomon-like structure. It's broken into three parts, told from three perspectives. First perspective is Matt Damon's Jean de Carrouge, who is a kind of lower French noble, not quite a noble. I don't know how French nobility works, but he's like a little below the nobles. He's working the land. He's got some land.
Not educated.
Some serfs and whatnot. Not educated. Can't read. Can't write. But he's great in battle. He kills a whole bunch of people. Second perspective is Jacques Legris, who's played by Adam Driver, and he is an educated, again like just below the nobles. Yeah. But he gets along well with Ben Affleck's Pierre d'Alençon. In the course of the film, he attacks Marguerite de Carrouge, who is Jean de Carrouge's wife. He sexually assaults her. From his perspective, this is a game of the sort that the royals play all the time in the 14th century France. And then the final perspective is Marguerite's, and she's like, no, this is rape. It's rape, not sexual. It's rape. It's not fun. No games. It's not cool. So the titular last duel is the fight between Jacques Legris and Jean de Carrouge to sort out before the eyes of God who is telling the truth here. Was it rape? Was it not rape? Again, I found this movie to be weirdly funny. It is all of the interactions between Damon and Affleck are funny.
Yes.
All of the interactions between Affleck and Driver are funny. I mean, like the scene where Adam Driver's got like 17 different abacuses going, and he's figuring out how much money the count is owed by various people, and Affleck just knocks it over, shouting, "Recalculate!" I like lost it in the theater. I was laughing my ass off. It has again that like kind of gladiator style extreme sword and sandal violence, right? There's just a lot of like really brutal stuff in this, which you could sell to people more easily than like here's the medieval Me Too movie. The marketing for this film, and here's my point, finally, I'll get to it. The marketing for this film is total malpractice. Like, I don't blame people for not going to see it, because it was sold to them as, like, this dour message movie. And it is not quite that, even though it is definitely a message movie. This is very much medieval Me Too. That is an acceptable elevator pitch. But it is more than that, and it is more entertaining than that. But I get the sense that JVL disagrees.
Yes,
because
I want to ask JVL what he thought, because I saw your text earlier, but I said we'll save it for the show, as we always do. I will say this, Sonny, because you were asking about our theater experiences. Mine, I went to a weekday showing, and there were only two people in the theater, me and some other dude in the front who was making some weird moaning noises, so I don't know. Also, he was saying the same thing about some guy in the back behind him. Anyway, JVL.
I can't believe I sat through.
Let unleash. Let her
3-hour sword and shield epic long. With not one orc in it.
why do you throw that in there? Okay.
I would like to preface our entire discussion. This is a rape movie. It is a movie about rape. And there is no way for us to have this conversation about the movie without talking a lot about rape, and
it's a rape movie.
So it's a movie.
if people find this upsetting or like this is a...
It is very... it was very uncomfortable.
Take it off.
I mean... Yeah.
So it's not a message movie. It's a catharsis movie. This is not... this is Django Unchained for Me Too. Right? The joy of Django Unchained or Inglourious Basterds is a retelling of things in such that the people who are always getting shit on get to go and just absolutely eviscerate the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And that's what The Last Duel winds up being. It's a movie which is not, there is no shades of gray in it. There are no, like, well, it isn't Rashomon, right? So Rashomon is the telling of a story from three different ways, and the audience is left to try to figure out, well, which one is which. This one literally tells you when it gets to the third version, which is Marguerite's, it calls it the truth.
Right. Yeah. If you see the rest of it fades out, but the last two words you see is the truth. So
and
we get
so
the
what the filmmakers are telling us is that it is using those other two perspectives to indict those characters, not to show it from their perspective, but to add an indictment of it. And this is, you know, like, what do we want to see happen? You know, you said this in your review at the Bowler, Sonny. This really is, I think, as you say, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck working out the extent to which they have been complicit in the entire, like, Bill Clinton thing, Democratic World thing, and Harvey Weinstein thing. And what is it that everybody would like to see happen to Harvey Weinstein? We would like to see somebody put a dagger through Harvey Weinstein's mouth.
A roundel.
So that it comes back out the back of his head, and then have the fat piece of shit stripped naked and hung upside down in the town square. That's what The Last Duel gives you.
Can I disagree with this slightly insofar as it is not Django Unchained or something like that, because it is very clear that Marguerite does not want what is happening to play out the way it plays out. I'm not saying she doesn't want Jacques Legris dead. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that she is unhappy with the way all of this plays out. And the second to last shot of the movie is this great shot of Marguerite and Jean kind of riding out of the stadium, and the camera from her, the camera on her, she is like, she looks kind of relieved, but like also like done with it. And the camera on Matt Damon, he's like breaking into full smile. He's like, finally, I'm getting the recognition I deserve.
Right. He's always wanted this
for
respect.
for what I have done and for what I deserve.
But we are then given in the coda what we want, because the coda to the movie tells us a year later he dies in the Crusades and that
she lived happily
ever after with her kid and never remarried. So this isn't what Marguerite... I mean, Marguerite actually does eventually get what she wants, but we, the audience, get what we want from this.
I think this is the deny line is that is from the Clinton.
It's literally from the Clinton invasion. I mean, right? But it's not just, I mean, I put together a whole list of, this movie is not just about the Clinton stuff. It is like every sexual abuse story from the last 40 years in America. We have slut shaming and the public vilification of rape accusers, which happens with the friend who narcs out on Marguerite having said that Kylo is handsome. It has the corruption of the Catholic Church with Ivo, what's his face, talking about how the church trials are...
The church
trials are more lenient because a lot of priests do this sort of thing. We have the shitty media men list where the lady at the ceremony who blows Kylo off is like, yeah, we all know about you, no thanks. We have the Todd Akin, you can't get pregnant from rape. We have the 70s obsession with how women never orgasm during sex. If you orgasm during rape, it's, you know, is it really rape? Husbands can rape their wives. At some point, like 2 hours in this movie, I felt like every plot line from every Law & Order SVU ever made was put into this.
In that movie, yeah.
And to the extent where they literally give us a scene of horse rape just in case there was anybody in the back not paying attention.
Yeah.
And but please understand, I'm not complaining about any of this. This is why I'm saying I don't think it's a message movie. I think it's a catharsis movie with all of these things,
which are terrible, right? Which have been happening in the world around us. This is the movie that just supposes, all right, well, what if all of those assholes got theirs? And that's why it's Django Unchained, right? In Django, we want to see him shooting up all the people at Candyland, right? And that's what this gives us. And is that, it's, as you know, as Sonny says, there is a playfulness to it. It's really dark in its indictment, and I think actually paints a very nuanced, not nuanced, a very accurate picture of what sexual predators are like. This is, you know, we said that the Rashomon aspect of it is there to indict the two men, but it really does a great job of playing on the audience's expectations of things, especially with Legree, right? So when we see Legree, who is the Kylo Ren character,
Adam Driver,
right, him. He is educated and charming, and he's funny, and he actually like tries to do the right thing by a lot of people, right?
Sure.
He's absolutely. And we're all thinking to ourselves, yeah, actually, this guy's the good guy in the movie, right? To the extent there's a good guy. But then we see that that's all part of because he's a predator, right? This is the, you know, the predators do this sort of thing to pass, right? And
how can I just interject here slightly? So do we, how much of the him being a predator is innate to him, and how much of it is him being in and surrounded by the Ben Affleck character's world, right? Like he... This is why it reminds me so much of the Weinstein and Hollywood stuff, because it's like you have people who would not necessarily behave this way if they were not conditioned to see people doing it, by seeing people doing it all the time. And like you get parts of that in the movie where there's a literal orgy in Ben Affleck's chambers, and like,
great scene.
It's
Vic's favorite scene in the movie.
It was my favorite scene that almost got it to an A+. But
you know, I actually think that we know that this is innate to him because he is asked about his studies for the priesthood, and he says, you know, there were aspects of the priesthood which I simply could not live with, and he and Ben Affleck chuckle about that. So I think this is them telling this is what he likes doing. Like, he likes abusing women. And we see him, you know, chasing around. There's a scene where at the party he chases around the woman and catches her. And that, again, it's not clear. Is that a playful she's saying no or not?
See,
and they're setting that up, I think, as a, you know, way for us to try to start alibiing his character.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, I mean, I think the rug is then pulled out from under us when we see something that is clearly rape, and which he, during the rape, clearly understands is wrong. That's the other. They don't alibi us. They don't let us, the audience, alibi his character by saying, oh, well, he actually really thought. The reason they show it from his perspective is because, yeah, I mean, this is the classic legal definition, right? You have to be able to, a reasonable person would have to understand that what they were doing is wrong. And in that scene, he understands what he's doing is wrong.
Well, it's funny because, you know, how they talk about how they break it into three different, you know, acts. And it's like his, Carouge's version, Legree's version, and Marguerite's. And even in Legree's version, I thought for sure that the encounter was going to be a lot more mutually, you know, like in his mind, but even from his perspective, I thought he was going to be like in his mind, oh, I thought she was really into it, but no, it's like, wow, that was really bad. And then of course it was even worse when he got to her part. Right. But
Vic, what did you think of it?
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
This is a quadrant.
It is.
It's a weird quadrant.
It's a weird quadrant.
No, it's not really. Like, it hits some of them. It doesn't hit others.
Okay, so the plot is an A. It's pretty easy to understand, right? It's just three different stories about what
you weren't confused.
I was not confused. No, I don't think I had any questions.
Wait, that's not what he said when they talked. He said it in the other words.
Right? No. This is not like. It's not like that Under the Silver Lake movie thing that was insane. Okay, this one is very clear cut. Just three different.
It's not like Widows.
Oh. would get me out of there. Duration was a D. Man, that was, it was long, because it's like, okay, hey, well, after you get through the middle of the second version, you're like, wait, we have to go through this again? Yeah. One more time. And luckily, it's shorter.
A little bit long, but it zipped along for me. Okay. It did not drag for me.
Action and violence is A+, but not an A++. Why is that? Because the last battle was so incredible. I'll get to that in a little in a moment. The battle scenes, I wanted gladiator level. And it's funny because it has this weird, Ridley Scott has the same sort of, it was the same thing in Gladiator, where in these fight scenes, there's a shakiness going on in their movements and stuff. It's very grainy or gritty. I can't really explain it, but I wanted a longer sort of a Braveheart length battle somewhere. Instead, they tease you. If you're into history, right, I found it fascinating. I will often watch movies that are period pieces, historical dramas, and then I'll get distracted from the plot by, in my mind, trying to place it in perspective of the time and what was happening. So in my mind, you know, this is like in the middle of the Hundred Years' War, you know, between the English and the French and the battle, you know, Plantagenets, House of Valois, all these things going on in Normandy. I just couldn't stop. And Scotland, I'm like, well, it's a century after Braveheart, but it's, you know, 30, 40 years before Agincourt. So, I mean, it's like, I'm thinking, I'm really into it because I really like this movie, but I wanted longer fight scenes. Okay, the sex nudity thing, it suffered because you get raped.
Tricky.
Careful. You get raped demerits, okay? It was 80+ by the time it got to the orgy scene, and then it lost points because rape demerits were added. I don't know if you remember this. The Quadrants added it after the Accused came out. You know, the Quadrants have been around since like the late 70s. I don't know if you know this. And so, you know, you lose points. No one wants to see that. That's terrible. I mean, obviously, you want to see it, but you're not going
to derive. I'm sorry. I have to ask you something, Victorino.
It was terrible. Yeah.
If I told you you're going to get a scene
that's
an orgy.
Yeah,
right, with great. Four yeah. French yeah. maids mm-hmm. going at it together.
Yes.
Why are they? That yes. sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But was that? Did that scene deliver on the promise? Because for the
no,
most
because
part,
they were in the background.
They're all in the I'm far distance my, away, and I could just tell you were leaning. And, wow, I was, what is
in
that?
Fact,
did you talk back to the screen?
I said to the other guy, I said, you get a better view from your seat? You mind if I sit next to you?
Not Bob nearly Crane exploitive style. Enough.
Right. You know, Bob Crane style. You mind if we just, you know, okay. Yeah, it starts off like that, right? Remember that? And next thing you know, you're not even looking at the movie. You know, I mean, that's what happens. That's, you know, it's a slippery slope, so to speak. Okay. So no, yes, that was the cons of the rape. I mean, it was awful, but
it was both an A+ and an F.
Yeah, because it was intentionally so, because you're seeing what she had to go through. It was not great, but that last scene. I've seen Joust. If you've ever seen that Heath Ledger movie where he plays a knight, this is
First
not
Night.
Like, what was it called?
Wasn't it First Night?
First
Wasn't
Night. I always get confused with First Night
no,
and then the one with
a Knight's
Richard
Tale.
Gere. A Knight's Tale. First
I like to think
Richard
of that
Gere.
As the Paul Bettany movie.
First Night was a Richard Gere. Right? Yeah.
What
it's
was
a
that,
Paul. That's I like to think of a Knight's Tale as a Paul Bettany movie.
Oh, but it's a Paul
which
Bettany.
Stars
yes,
Heath Ledger.
Right. That's right. Paul Bettany. And so you know you see that or these Joust movies or if you even
go to medieval times.
Medieval times. Yeah, if you go way back and you can go back to Connecticut Yankee King Arthur's Court, which I saw on TV as a kid. Everyone's very clean in the middle, you know, even in the Middle Ages, no one's, you know, their teeth, everyone's very, everyone here is so dirty, with a few exceptions, Marguerite for one, but even like Charles VI, who was still a teenager at the time, right? So, I mean, his uncles were the regents, right? They were the ones who were calling the shots, you know, there's a little griminess to them all, but that final scene, you know, a joust is not just the lance. And I always thought, you know, they go at it. Somebody got knocked down. Okay, you know. And no, it just repeats itself until finally you get off, you dismount, and then you get to work. And there are the bladed weapons, but there's also the blunt weapons, right? And you have warhammers, mauls, and the roundel is the last thing. It's the dagger. You can carry the dagger on the side. And, oh, what an ending. I couldn't believe it. I said, are they going to show it? They're going to show it going right into the mouth. I almost stood up and clapped. It was so good.
You know, the thing I did
And you know
realize...
what? I didn't see, I don't think it was CGI, Sonny. I think it's like all virus,
it actually
ILM.
Killed,
I think
kill that driver. No, Adam Driver's actually dead. I don't mean
it
that way.
But I mean, it was sort of like more ILM tricks.
Practical. It was practical
effects. Yes. I didn't stay to the end. I wonder if it was ILM that did it because they're really good at that sort of
stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's a 100% chance that there were digital effects in there, but the actual fight, I think, was pretty practical.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's...
What I did not realize about Joust is that they didn't have to wait for the other fellow to get his next lance, that you just go. If he's fumbling with his lance... So what? You just keep going.
That's right. That's right. The squires and the squires had a dangerous.
Squire got killed.
Squire got killed.
And it did not seem like the crowd really cared, did it?
Did not give.
No.
There was no like, you're not supposed to kill the squire.
Front row seats. I would have had front row seats.
So did you guys catch?
For the murder games, you would have had front row seats.
Yes,
for the murder games.
Yeah, well,
and you would have been totally
yes,
into
honey,
it.
You know me.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
I had no problem with that other movie.
Did you guys catch in the beginning of the? In the very beginning of the movie, when we are being shown the voiceover as they prepare for the last duel, and the voiceover, which is establishing the rules of the duel, says that no one may carry any weapons which are enchanted.
Oh, right.
Or have been blessed or had spells placed upon them.
Yeah,
and that's the moment where I said, fuck this movie, I'm out.
Oh, no.
You can't walk in there with a plus six ice sword.
If you can't go in there with Sting.
Mithril.
Or...
Mithril.
Adamantium.
What sort of rules
diamond
are
sword.
This?
How about a diamond
where you're
sword?
Not allowed to go into a fight with enchanted weapons?
That's right. You
know, I'm just going to reach into my bottomless bag and pull out my
the bottomless
plus
bag.
Four
yes.
Warhammer.
That's right. The bottomless bag.
The troll killer.
Yes. But one of the weird things about the movie was, again, you were talking about the trailer, but the whole, you know, who's telling the truth? It's pretty obvious who's telling, you know, it's not like, well, I wonder.
Well, it's
you know?
Interesting. So the Rashomon aspect is interesting for a couple of reasons. There are very subtle differences throughout the film. For instance, when Matt Damon comes back from his, you know, the wars in Scotland, and he's like on death's doorstep, he's got croup, he's got, you know, and then everybody else who sees him at this time, he has like a sniffle. He's like, he coughs a little bit.
Oh yeah.
It's like, it's interesting. Again, it's like from his perspective, he's like almost dying. He's so sick. Like every man who has ever had a cold, he is so sick that he is almost dying. And from everybody else's perspective, it's like, all right, get it together, guy. The other one that jumped out at me, and I'm sure there are more, but the other one that jumped out at me was in the prelude to the rape, from Legree's perspective, she takes her shoes off.
Oh, right.
Before she goes up the steps.
Yes, right. Yes.
And when we watch it from her perspective, they fall off as she flees.
Yes.
And it's just, again, it's because you're right, JVL. It's not, none of this is designed to show like, they thought it was one way, but it was actually this. It is just interesting, the little details that stick out in these characters' mind to kind of, you know, absolve them.
Yeah. Also, the subtleties of the location of the kiss when she kisses him, right? On the mouth, on the cheek, who's kissing whom, you know what I'm talking about, the scene Marguerite is introduced to. Yes.
You know, can we talk a little bit about Ben Affleck? Because he's halfway doing Bruce Wayne.
Oh, you
but
think
he's
so?
Also the most interesting thing in the movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. Best performance, like my favorite performance of the year so far, Ben Affleck in this movie.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't think it's a great performance, but it's a really interesting performance because he is acting in a different movie than everybody else.
Huh.
Well, this is
everybody
the,
else
this
is doing the... their own thing, and it's very serious, and he is not. He's in his own movie, and he's in his own movie regardless of which person is telling the story. Which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he also is the only male character who might be okay. Every other male character is evil in some way or another. And Ben Affleck is the one guy who, when Legree comes to him, his first response is, did you do it? Like, he cares whether or not Legree did it.
Can I, two things to this. First, he does feel like he's kind of in his own movie, but I feel like that is absolutely the point. That is absolutely like the core of the character.
Oh,
he
totally
is so
true.
Privileged. Yes. He is so privileged and so above all of these concerns that these people have with their like petty morality and everything else that it like, he floats. His big concern is, does he wear the gold shoes or the lacquer shoes?
It's
like,
great.
You know, it's like,
I love it. No, I wasn't indicting it. I was saying that's what makes everything in the performance interesting.
He wore the same gown. He wore the same gown as Adam Driver's mentor in The Force Awakens. What was his name? The LeMay.
Snoke.
Oh, he does look a little bit like Snoke.
Yeah, the gold LeMay thing.
Yeah. I love the Ben Affleck performance, and I love the way the character is written. Mm-hmm. It is funny. Like, he's the one who sparks
life.
Okay,
I'm glad that you say that, because you were giving me a look when I was saying that this movie is like.
Oh, I know what he was getting.
Saying
at.
That
he was
the
getting
movie
else.
Is weirdly but. Funny is not where
moments,
I would go.
There were moments where I did laugh out loud as well.
Ben Affleck's entire time on the screen is like high comic value. Even just the very first moment where Matt Damon shows up and he kneels like slightly too
closer.
Far, and Affleck's like closer.
Yeah. Does not closer. Like him. Well,
it's just like everything about it. I, like the did, look on his face, him. The like his rolling the eyes. I have to deal with this idiot, illiterate.
Bonus points for the movie when. Marguerite and Adam and Legree start talking in German about Parzival. I was like, oh, this is getting good. Sorry. Well, that was before the thing.
I actually thought the movie suffered slightly whenever he wasn't on screen. And she's great. Who's that actress again? What's her name?
Jodie Comer. She was in Free Guy.
Yeah, she does really subtle work all movie long and never devolves into... either sentimentality or trading on the audience's
over
sympathy
the top,
for her.
Right.
I thought she was just a dynamite performance.
Yep. Yeah, I liked her a lot too. I thought just the whole cast is solid. Did you notice Legree's right-hand man is the actor Adam Nagatis, who also was in Gunpowder Milkshake, and he plays a scumbag in both. You know what
yeah.
I mean? He's just that sort
yeah,
of
that's
ratty,
right. That is
sort
him.
Of, ugh,
yep.
Guy. And I don't know if he is that. He just fits it perfectly. In a
the
sort of
the
really
corrupt
unlikable.
Sheriff from Chav King Arthur is in it. Mm. Is one of the
is that Martin Sokas?
Yeah, I think that's him. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's lovely. I did you catch the telling us exactly whose kid. The baby is at the end where we as
are we supposed to think that it is
Ben Affleck's kid?
Legree's kid.
Oh, that's what
why
we
do you
mean.
Think
that?
That?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
the
that's
mayor.
I was going to say Legree.
So
that's
he's,
what I meant,
as he's walking out of wherever that you know the thing where they all met up, he. Goes up to this gray mare and it's doing this crazy weird kissy faces to it and all like it's a weird thing while he's talking to his little right hand guy.
Yes.
And then we later see that Matthew Damon has bought this mare and brought it home and is going to breed it and it's going to be bred. But then the horse gets raped and is pregnant with the stallion which raped the horse. And
see, now I missed all that was over my head. All that was very over my head. I just thought because of the like super blonde hair, he looked that doesn't make sense as Adam Driver's kid or Matt Damon's kid.
I assumed it
but
was.
But maybe it's peroxide Ben Affleck.
I was going to say my vote is Legree because I feel like Ben Affleck Matt Damon is once again playing a character who can't deliver the goods because remember it was the same thing in The Departed. He had issues.
Yeah. I do wonder how those guys reconcile having Harvey Weinstein as their patron.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they owe their careers to Harvey.
Sure.
I bet they never think about it. I bet they never. I bet they, I mean,
I think
I,
this
I,
movie
like,
shows they clearly think about it a lot. Don't you?
I think, I think this movie
their penance.
I think this movie is them I don't know. I mean, look, I have always thought that Ben Affleck is smarter than he gets credit for. There's a joke early in Family Guy, one of the first few seasons back when I was actually watching it, where Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are like Matt Damon is like finishing the script for Good Will Hunting, and Ben's like, "I'll put my name on it too. Put my name on it too, Matt." And Matt's like, "Oh, come on, Ben. I wrote the whole thing." And the joke was always like, "Oh, Matt Damon's the smart one. Ben Affleck's kind of the idiot, you know, paparazzi loving, you know, jackass." And I've always thought that was wrong. And I think that his directorial career has shown that that's definitely wrong. And I think that
oh, directorial,
this movie
is
like weirdly interesting. I do think it's introspective. I do think that they probably think about this when they want to think about it, but mm-hmm. I don't think it like keeps them up at night.
That's probably right. I mean, the reason Affleck has that reputation, I think, is because of his drinking problem, right? I mean, people took
the drinking and the paparazzi
before,
stuff, you know?
but that paparazzi stuff is all because he had a drinking problem, and it was so young in his life that people didn't realize. They just thought, oh, he's a wild party guy, and it wasn't, you know, like if you're still doing those things when you're 45, that's when people realize, oh, he's not a wild party guy, he has a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think you know, he just had a problem the whole time, and Damon didn't. But anyway, William Goldman wrote that movie anyhow. So,
yes.
This is...
Okay.
Which he always denies. I never believed it. I will go to my grave believing that William Goldman did the actual important script doctoring on that.
I was going to say the treatment.
I don't think that's true after the movies that Ben Affleck has written and directed and this movie. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. I think we can move on from here. Yes.
Dune!
Unless you had any other thoughts. Dune! Wow. That's going to be a big one. Okay. Any other, so you have any corrections, shout outs, anything of that nature? I have a shout out to a new listener, Captain Peter Christensen, for subscribing. And thank you for your service. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sunny Bunch at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Wow. You so must, things are so slow. Yes. We're now giving individual shout outs to new subscribers when they.
No, come on. What was that?
He is the brother of Josh Christensen, who is a colleague of mine at the Free Beacon. So I just thought shout out.
That's no, we actually
not a completely is, random, but I see we're up again. We were down. We're back.
No,
up.
this has been a good month for signups. We're doing these bonus Squid Game episodes.
I think it's because of Squid Game.
People love Squid Game.
Listen, you want to find out what we think about these games.
I'm
subscribe.
Excited to talk about episodes 4 and 5.
Oh, right.
I have turned around on the show a little bit. I'm actually kind of into it now.
I have to pretend that I didn't finish it. And also, without giving anything away, I just want to say, JVL, it turns out you were right. Okay, I'll just leave it at that.
All right. I'm sure it's fine.